live from the Poly Market Studio in L.A. It's the Young Turks.
If you like the Young Turks podcast, I think you'll love a lot of the podcasts on the TYT network. Old School, it's one of my favorites, one of the favorites for a lot of the listeners. Please check that out, subscribe, share it. That makes a big difference, and give it a 5-star rating. Thank you.
Back on a Young Turks, at least I am. It's a lovely Wednesday afternoon in America. We got a lot of devastating stories for you guys, as always. We'd like to, you know, welcome you to a wonderful afternoon where we will devastate you.
So there's some good stuff sprinkled in today.
Oh no, no question, sprinkles.
Yes.
I taught my son a secret handshake. It's not secret at all, but he thinks it is. And then we do like cool handshake, and then we do the fist bump at the end, and then we throw in sprinkles.
No way.
Yeah, 100%, ruined the whole thing.
But why?
It's just because we think it's funny. The kid already gets irony at 9 years old. Anyway, so if you're wondering if I'm sick, you are correct, I am.
Oh, God damn it.
If you're wondering if my hair is fluffy, yes it is. Obama had an advisor named David Plouffe. Anna has an advisor named Cenk Fluff. Okay, anyways. All right, I'm a goofy guy. But look, we got serious stories. Something that happened in the spin room last night is a really interesting story. We're going to get to that in a second. Obviously, debate analysis. This squad / just Democrats come in for Bernie. Big story. But one of my favorite stories is a little bit later in the program. There's a whole bunch of great, great stories today. But it's the story of how the Democrats are not going to vote on impeachment inquiry. And that story is perfect and maddening at the same time. So don't miss that one. And later in the program, I got three guests for you for the price of one. This is all in the third hour. We are gonna have a post game, but it's gonna be later. Because I got someone who's gonna defend elitism. I got someone who's gonna tell you all the different people that Epstein had contact with that are might still be in trouble. And then in the last half hour, Marianne Williamson is going to join me for a sit-down interview here. Look, if you missed my interview with Julian Castro yesterday, you can check that out at tyt.com under presidential election coverage. And tonight at 8:30 Eastern, Marianne Williamson in the studio. So we'll get into all the different issues and let's get started because it's a full show.
Let's do it.
Is Joe Biden responsible for students not being able to discharge their debts and the giant amount of debt that they now have because of that bankruptcy bill?
That's Cenk calling out some of Biden's past terrible policy decisions. And he's asking this question to Senator Chris Coons, who's notorious for his moderate positions. Oftentimes when it comes to financial issues or financial policy, he'll vote against the best interests of the American people, but certainly the Democrats who have voted him into office. But nonetheless, let's hear what his answer is as he squirms through the rest of this video.
So the bankruptcy bill came up tonight. Is Joe Biden responsible for students not being able to discharge their debts and the giant amount of debt that they now have because of that bankruptcy bill?
No.
No.
Well, he's the one that passed the law that said that they cannot discharge their debts. So isn't he obviously partially responsible?
He made significant adjustments to that bill to make sure that it would be better for working people, for women, for children. So no, that is not the case.
But students cannot discharge their debts. Isn't that true? And isn't that part of the bill? So you didn't like that question.
My favorite part of that was at the very end when you said, so you didn't like that question. Because he didn't, and he was squirming throughout that entire video. I mean, he didn't even really try to answer it.
Okay, so we're gonna tell you what the reality is in a second. I want you to know the other person in that video is Kate Bedingfield. She's the deputy campaign manager and communications director for Joe Biden. And so I thought that their reaction to that was among the most telling things I've ever seen about the establishment. Because obviously I am correct and we're gonna share the information with you. I didn't ask that question. I wouldn't ask that question unless I knew I was sure. And so we're in the middle of a spin room. There's dozens of reporters all around this particular scrum, let alone the whole room. They brought up the bankruptcy bill in the Bernie Sanders did in a retort to Joe Biden in the debate. So I thought it made perfect sense to ask this question. But their reaction was, one first of laughter, like look at this person daring to challenge us in a way that isn't part of the narrative. It's not that they never get challenged. So they got challenged on all the same questions. That's always what happens in the spin room. So how much money do you have left on hand? How much have you spent already? It's questions they're prepared for that is part of the so-called narrative. And it's the horse race, the gamesmanship, etc. When you ask about substantive policy questions, their reaction, they don't necessarily see that it's me. I went on to ask a couple more questions to Coons, which he was also not happy about. But I don't think that he's even familiar with Young Turks, to be honest with you. And I don't know if that's part of it in terms of the spokesperson, etc. But overall, I think that's a smaller part. I think they laugh like, who's this crazy person asking a policy question?
Oh, I definitely got that sense.
Yeah.
You're absolutely right. And I want to differentiate between what they expect and why they're okay with that versus why they weren't okay with the type of question you asked. When they're asking about how much money on hand, and when they're asking specific questions about the horse race, these are questions that pertain to the actual candidates, right? It affects the candidates as opposed to the American people in general. When you ask questions about policy, it's about how these policies have impacted the American people, not them.
Yeah.
So they like answering questions about themselves. They don't, or their party or electoral politics that impacts them. But they don't like answering questions about things that they've done or have supported that actually impact the American people.
But more than that, they're just not used to it. They're like, and they think it's out of bounds by definition. So the other question I was considering asking about how Joe Biden helped to start the war on drugs. That's absolutely true. And The Intercept did a wonderful lengthy story about the history of that and how Biden pushed Ronald Reagan to do the war on drugs and Reagan was reluctant, etc. But if I ask that question, and maybe I will in the next spin room, I guarantee you their reaction is the same. Like, that's a weirdo. That's totally correct. But that, you know, and you're not allowed to ask that. That's not part of any narrative, right? And so you can see them snickering there, snickering with for what? And then the dismissiveness of, no, all of our establishment media friends don't hold us accountable to that. So I could easily tell you something that isn't true here, where they said, oh, no, he made the bill much better.
No, he didn't.
He made it way worse.
Yes.
And that is because he represents Delaware, and where most of the corporations are literally incorporated, and they have given Joe Biden a tremendous amount of money. And did it affect his vote? Absolutely. Absolutely. But no reporter has ever challenged them on that in their entire lives. Hey, did Joe Biden take money from the credit card companies and the banks and vote because of the money? The answer is obvious. Everybody knows the millions of dollars that he got affected his vote. But everyone in that room, everyone in Washington thinks that that's an outrageous question. And so that's why they snicker. But if you notice at the end when I said it's not true, then they got angry.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was a little like kind of look at me. And then they refused to answer. Like, because they know the rest of the media is not going to join along. The rest of the media doesn't even know, right? Honestly. Do they know the what Joe Biden did in that bankruptcy bill and how it affected students? Look, I feel bad saying it, but I think the great majority of the reporters don't know. And so they never bother to ask about policy. And it's not their fault, it's their editor's fault. Because the editor says, give me a horse race. I don't want to do policy because I think policy is boring. In other words, I can't be neutral on it.
How can policy be boring?
If you're in news. Yeah, if you're in news, how can policy be boring? No, it's an excuse. It's an excuse to not cover policy because policy hurts the status quo, the establishment, etc. When they dive into policy and they can't be neutral. Either Joe Biden did actually take the money or he didn't. Joe Biden actually did push for the bill or he didn't. But then you have to say Joe Biden is wrong, and they never, ever, ever want to say that. So without further ado, let's give you the facts.
So to give you exact numbers, throughout his political career, Joe Biden has received more than $2 million in campaign donations from the financial industry. And those donations, those campaign contributions have certainly influenced his decision to go after the bankruptcy protections for students who have student loan debt. So it all started back in 1978 when it came to federally backed student loans. We're gonna get to that in just a second. But as recently as 2005, he pushed for legislation that would prevent students from gaining or taking advantage of bankruptcy protection when it comes to private loans. So according to reporting in the International Business Times, and this is reporting from back in 2015, it was just the most detailed and solid and had the most sources cited that I could look into to confirm what was reported. And it's completely accurate and the numbers are insane. So in the past, debtors in her position, and they profiled the story of one student who had hundreds of thousands of dollars in student loan debt, could have used bankruptcy court to shield them from some of their creditors. But a provision slipped into federal law in 2005 effectively bars most Americans from accessing bankruptcy protections for their private student loans. Biden was one of the key proponents of the 2005 legislation that is now bearing down on students. The bill effectively prevents $150 billion worth of private student debt from being discharged, rescheduled, or renegotiated as other debt can be in bankruptcy court.
So let's pause right there. So that's the famous 2005 bankruptcy bill. So as you see there, we'll come back to the 2 million and whether it affected his vote. But the vote is not in dispute. Biden pushed for the bankruptcy bill, voted for the bankruptcy bill. The bankruptcy bill does make it not harder, but it literally prevents the $150 billion worth of private student debt from being discharged. Mm-hmm. So my question was 100% accurate. So if they wanted to, and they wanted to actually have a substantive conversation about it, they could claim what? Well, look, there's $1.2 trillion in debt, and so it doesn't affect all the debt involved. Yes, it made it harder or impossible in some cases. But if they have a claim for why Joe Biden made the bill better, I don't think that anyone has ever reported that, leading me to believe it's not true. But they should, if they have the information, look, you're in the middle of a media scrum in a spin room. You came out to make the argument on behalf of your candidate. Make the argument. Tell us why this bankruptcy bill is not what it appears to be in writing and in effect. But you don't have that argument because we're right and you're wrong.
He made the bill much worse, and I'll get to that in just a second. But first, I want to talk about the impact this had on student loan debt overall in the country. So student debt actually grew as Biden climbed the Senate ladder and helped lenders tighten bankruptcy laws, spiked from $24 billion issued annually in 1990 to 1991 to $110 billion from 2012 to 2013, according to data from the Pew Research Center. So one of the issues that happened after this legislation was passed was, well, private lenders are thinking to themselves, oh, we're good, because no matter what, we can go ahead and lend to anyone and not have to worry about paying the consequences if someone defaults, because they won't be able to discharge this loan or these loans when they file for bankruptcy. They don't have that bankruptcy protection. So that really did help to make student loan debt far worse than it needed to be. So let me give you more information on that. On the Senate Judiciary Committee, Biden helped lenders make it more difficult for Americans to reduce debt through bankruptcy, a trend that experts say encouraged banks to loan more freely with less fear that courts could erase their customers' repayment obligations. With more debtors barred from bankruptcy protections, the average American debt load went up by two-thirds over the last 40 years. Today, there's more than $10,000 of personal debt for every person in the country, as compared to $6,000 in the early 1970s. Now, that graphic that I just read to you pertains to all debt that impacts most Americans. But when it comes to student loan debt, obviously, if you look at the numbers and how much it's increased, even in like the last two decades, you can see the type of impact this type of legislation has had. Now, I want to go to the 1970 legislation in just a minute, but do you want to jump in?
Yeah, so I want to give you a sense of how many people are burdened by this. 1.1 million people face student debt loans above the number of $100,000. So over a million people have student debt over $100,000. When Biden talks about it from time to time, very rarely, He'll mention things like, oh, like I understand that you could even have $6,000 in debt these days. What are you talking about? As usual, he's stuck in a time from decades ago, a time before he rigged the rules against students. And so after you rigged the rules, Joe, it got way worse. $6,000, that's a joke. The highest I've ever seen him talk about is $25,000. Oh my God, can you imagine students have $25,000 in debt? Over a million people have over $100,000 in debt. Over 167,000 people have over $200,000 in student debt. And they have become, in the words of some of the economists, indentured servants. Mm-hmm. And they created that because you can't discharge the debt. Donald Trump can get rid of all of his debt by declaring bankruptcy for far greater sums of money. And he's done it 6 different times. But if you're a student, partly because of Joe Biden, you can't. And it's an albatross around your neck. And Biden created that, and it is now in epic proportions.
And to be quite honest with you, he's pretty unapologetic about it. Because when it comes to the struggles of young people in America today, here's what he recently had to say when he was asked about it.
You know, shortly after I graduated in 68, Kent State, 17 kids shot dead. And so the younger generation now tells me how tough things are. Give me a break. No. I have no empathy for it. Give me a break. Because here's the deal, guys. We decided we were going to change the world, and we did. We did. We finished the civil rights movement to the first stage. The women's movement came to being. So my message is, get involved. There's no place to hide.
So I got to address that, Anna. Sorry. Yeah. So first of all, he says we did the civil, we changed the world. You did, Joe, but you changed it for the worse. You made every one of these economic hardships significantly worse than it was for your generation. You talk about the civil rights movement. You didn't have anything to do with that. You were, in fact, opposed to busing. You came in the 1970s after the civil rights movement was largely over. So don't take credit for that. And then if you want to talk about women's rights, yes, I give you credit because we're fair. We care about the facts. The Violence Against Women Act was terrific. Joe Biden did shepherd that. Now, he put it into the middle of a crime bill that was draconian and hurt minorities tremendously in this country. Right. But it did have the Violence Against Women Act. I mean, he partly used it to get such a draconian bill through.
Exactly.
Otherwise, I get it, but he did do it, right? So fair is fair on that. But when he talks about how, hey, you know, there was a shooting in Kent State, we had it way worse. What are you talking about? There's mass shootings every day in America now. It's infinitely worse than it was back then. And yeah, Kent State was terrible. We have Kent State on steroids every day in America. Have you watched any of the news? Do you know what's happening in our schools, our malls, our movie theaters? Massacre after massacre. And then when you talk about finances, look, I've had some of the top politicians and even hedge fund managers and some of the richest people in the world on this show. Ray Dalio runs the largest hedge fund in the world. His dad was a jazz musician, bought a house in Long Island for $17,000. We don't live in that world.
Did he play the jazz flute though?
No,
he did not. Because I want to hear Ron Burgundy play the jazz
Okay,
flute.
I hear you on that. But seriously, guys, the world that Joe Biden grew up in was a better world. And then he came in, he got millions of dollars from credit card companies and made it much harder on you. And then he has the temerity to turn around and laugh at you and go, I don't care about you.
Give me a break.
Give me a break. Oh, exactly. Your life is so much easier. Not remotely true.
So one final thing I do want to mention, because I promised, he not only went after private loans earlier in his career, in 1978, he went after bankruptcy protections for people who had federally backed student loans. And it not only impacted individuals who went to traditional colleges and universities, it also impacted people who went to vocational schools. And it was based on ridiculous anecdotal evidence that was rebutted over and over again regarding students graduating and then immediately filing for bankruptcy protection. That was not a widespread practice that was happening in the country at the time, but Biden, along with two other Democratic senators, got together and they pushed for this legislation, and they made it nearly impossible, if not impossible, to discharge federally backed student loans. And so in order for one to do that, you have to prove that you, there's specific wording. You have to prove that there is a certainty of hopelessness that prevents you from paying back these loans. But it is impossible to prove that. Let me give you a recent example. A few years ago, there was a 45-year-old woman whose entire income was $10,000 per year in Social Security. She was disabled, permanently disabled, and that's why she was receiving that Social Security. When she applied to get her federally backed student loans discharged, she was denied. It wasn't good enough. $10,000 a year, that was her income.
So look, I want to get back to one final thing, which is the money that Joe Biden took. So he was known as the senator from MBNA, So if you're wondering what that is, MBNA used to be one of the largest credit card companies, and they were based out of Delaware, which is Joe Biden's home state, the state that he represented in the Senate. So he took tremendous amount of money from MBNA and other financial companies to the tune of over $1.9 million over his career, according to the Center for Responsive Politics. These are facts. So they'll usually attack the messenger. Oh, well, we don't like the people telling the facts. Well, okay, that's your prerogative, but they're facts nonetheless. And so now, this is where the so-called savvy reporters will say, well, yeah, behind the scenes, we'll call him the senator from MBNA, or we used to, because we know he's bought by the credit card companies and the financial institutions. But yes, but do you ever write it down? Oh, no, 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 that would be Reeve Ghosh. Well, then I would lose access. Okay, fine, at least we understand where we're coming from, right? But they called him that because he took $2 million and then almost always supported the legislative priorities of the credit card companies, the financial institutions, and did that against the interests of his voters and the American people and students. So now the facts are indisputable. The part that they will dispute, including the mainstream press, who is the biggest advocate for establishment politicians like Joe Biden, they will be shocked and chagrined and say, no, the $2 million from those financial companies were obviously done out of charity or for their health. Now, no real person in America believes that. Every real person knows that's in essence a bribe. It's a legalized bribe because of Citizens United and Buckley v. Valeo, but it's a bribe nonetheless. And that they'll be scandalized by it. But you're not scandalized by it. You know it's a bribe. You know that credit card companies aren't giving the senator from Delaware millions of dollars because they thought it was for the betterment of the country. I mean, think about how preposterous that is, how ridiculously stupid you would have to be to believe that. Yet all of the reporters in Washington go, oh yeah, no, of course, right. No, 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 it doesn't influence their votes at all. No, 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 poor Joe Biden, I can't believe you guys are accusing him of this. Poor guy only took $2 million from the banks and then made sure that you could never, ever, ever get rid of your student debt. What a funny coincidence. Well, it's not a coincidence. Here, we actually do journalism. And so I think the rest of the media should get way better, and they'll be super pissed at me for saying it. But do your job, ask him about the war on drugs, ask him about the bankruptcy bill, ask him about all of these policy issues. We're having a conversation about Hunter Biden because Donald Trump started it. Well, I mean, look,
it is a relevant conversation to have.
No,
especially
I know.
When you have Biden saying to young people today, give me a break, you don't have it so hard. Well, maybe that's what you think because your son was making $50,000 a month working on a board for a Ukrainian gas company.
Yeah, and yes, look, Beau Biden was a great guy in a lot of ways, his other son, and he died of cancer. He went and served in the military. And he did a lot of great things. He was attorney general in Delaware and participated in being tough against the banks, etc. So I'm not trying to judge his kids. I think Beau was fantastic. Hunter obviously has issues. He doesn't know anything about Ukrainian gas. Everyone on the planet knows that. But if you're looking at corruption, that's relatively minor compared to the mother load, which is I give you campaign contributions, millions of dollars of them, you do as I tell you, and you screw over the rest of America. That's the real corruption. That's the heart of corruption. Did Biden participate in it? Absolutely. Last thing I'll criticize, because I've been tough on the media here, and what they'll say, oh, you guys are biased, you actually care about facts. Anyway, I also want to be tough on the progressive candidates and all of his opponents. Bernie Sanders finally brought up the bankruptcy bill in what, now the fourth debate, in a passing comment. Warren's never brought it up. Buttigieg, who loves to yell at other people, Klobuchar, who loves to yell at other people, never bring it up.
I feel like Warren has brought it up. Am I wrong on that?
No, Warren's been fantastic. Her original conflict with Joe Biden was over the bankruptcy bill because she was on the other side going, no, don't do that. So you have to give Warren a tremendous amount of credit, don't get me wrong. But are we playing patty cakes, or are we going to actually investigate not the personal lives, the actual political record of these candidates? So yesterday, while people were again complaining because Booker loves to play this game where he goes, oh my God, we shouldn't hit each other. Buttigieg does the same thing. He goes, oh my God, we have to unite. And by the way, Bernie Sanders and Warren are the worst. They're socialists. Oh my God, they're terrible. Wait, I thought you said unite. What happened, right? So anyway, as they're playing those games, the progressive candidates are playing along too much. You should say, look, your record on the bankruptcy bill was terrible, and the student debt is partly your fault.
It's not all your fault, but it's definitely a huge part of it is Joe Biden. If the voters don't know that, then you've done a great disservice because they go into the voting booth without knowing the guy's true record. That's your job as the opponents as well as the media to investigate that. And so far, I think we've done a terrible job of investigating the real issues with Joe Biden. And whenever you bring it up, look at their reaction. I mean, right? Okay, all right, that's interesting. Can I get anybody else to follow up? Because, you know, for them, they say, oh, independent media. Independent media, you guys aren't even worth $1 billion. No, I'm not. But if the New York Times asks, I'm like, oh, okay, so New York Times, where are you? Where are you? Where's the bankruptcy bill? Where's your discussion of it? Nowhere to be found.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break. When we come back, we're gonna do some more coverage on what happened last night at the Democratic debate, including the mainstream media's take on who won and how much it differs from reality.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, you must unlearn what you have learned. And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
All right, back on the Young Turks. First of all, some comments for you guys. Calicity Celine writes in, just joined. That's awesome, thank you. TYT.com/join or TYT.com/Anna to become a member. Okay, there
it's my
you go.
Dance.
No question. Tyrell writes in and he explains that it rhymes with Furl, so I got it. Benningfield's smirk in response to Jenk's legitimate questions makes my face twitch. Okay. Pigs and Pumpkins says, I thank Joe Biden for still paying off my student loans in my 40s. I was a bright, poor kid who wanted better, so I went to college. Now I'm a bright, poor adult who never got the better because I'm still paying off loans. And that's how they rig the system. And that's why they are so angry if you ever bring it up. Razor writes in on Twitter, they seem rudely dismissive, almost smug, like, oh, this guy with the hard questions is beneath us. They probably aren't used to tough questions. Look, I know it's a little self-aggrandizing, but I agree with that completely. They're not used to those questions and they find them out of bounds. All right, and the last one is Spooky Satanic Majesty writes in, that comment from Biden made me want to vomit. He is so out of touch. So if you want to talk to us on Twitter, it's hashtag TYT Live. And by the way, I want to thank you guys. So we've just been nominated for Best News Show of the Year for the Streamies. You don't have to do anything more. You guys actually helped in the nominating process. As always, hashtag too strong. You guys are amazing. So we're now up for News Show of the Year again. And so basically we won the primary. We're now in the general election. And unlike progressives in politics, we will campaign very hard against our opponents. So now this, I'm coming for you. Okay, now get a load of this now. All right, whatever. All right. Anyway, thank you guys is my bottom line. Thank you.
All right, we also have some exciting news for you guys. First off, you should be using plastic water bottles. We all make the mistake time to time. You know, we're desperate. You should not. Do not use plastic water bottles. They're not good for the environment. Instead, boom, you should use these. These are from our Shop TYT store. They're aluminum, they're lightweight, and very fashionable, high fashion. So definitely check this out. Go to shoptyt.com. They're available, and there are obviously a few different options to choose from.
I'm gonna get those for my kids. They need water bottles.
Jake, okay, never mind. I fixed it.
Okay.
All right. My wire was sticking out. It was unattractive. So
I okay. Well, we wouldn't want that.
All right. Okay. Are we ready for more fun?
Well, I'm right here.
Okay. So, last night, following the Democratic debate in Ohio, Jake mentioned that he believed Bernie Sanders and progressivism overall won the debate. Now, the mainstream media has a completely different view on who won. And I want to talk about that a little bit. Politico had a piece out, and the title, the headline, really caught my attention. It read, quote, "I'm starting not to care that she is brutal to her staff." And that was a quote in regard to one of the 20 political experts they spoke to about the debates last night. And this individual is apparently a fan of Amy Klobuchar. Let me give you the exact quote. It's from Larry Sabato. He's a Politico contributor. He said, quote, "Klobuchar had some smart answers. I'm starting not to care that she's brutal to her staff. Why do we care so much about that? 99.9% of us will never work for her."
Okay, look, he's an interesting character, and he has his spots where he brings you numbers and stats and stuff that I find interesting. But he, like almost all the rest of them, have a bias that they're not that is so deep they're not aware of it. We'll get to that in a second. But that particular line is horrific, and he should have thought. I mean, that's a smart guy making a very dumb comment, because couldn't you use the same logic for Harvey Weinstein? Hey, 99.9% of us didn't work for Harvey Weinstein, so what difference does it make what he did to his staff? No, it makes a difference. Okay, now I'm not saying Klobuchar is Weinstein. Don't get me wrong, but yeah, you should care about what kind of person they are. But that's a small part of this. It's just a really bad quote. That's the bigger issue is their bias.
No, look, I think that quote, it's not a small part of this, right? Because the message behind it is, we don't care how much these centrist Democrats could possibly hurt the American people, Democratic voters, whatever it is. Like, I would rather have a centrist who's gonna keep things nice and comfy and cozy for me, even if they're abusive people, even if they could cause actual harm to people, because it makes me comfortable. That's what it's communicating. That's why I think it's important to mention that to you. But then they have a former House Republican Committee Council member, Sophia Nelson, and here's what she had to say. The winners were Klobuchar and Buttigieg. The centrist Midwestern candidates went after Warren with a vengeance all night. And they genuinely think that those attacks worked, that they landed. But I don't know, maybe I have a bias, but I felt like their attacks were incredibly lame. In fact, I'm gonna show you one of them. I'm gonna go to the Klobuchar video next. This is Amy Klobuchar from last night, and she's going after Elizabeth Warren on the issue of the wealth tax. As we all know, Elizabeth Warren wants to implement a wealth tax, and Klobuchar isn't a fan of that. Take a look.
Will a wealth tax work?
It could work. I am open to it. But I want to give a reality check here to Elizabeth, because no one on this stage wants to protect billionaires. Not even the billionaire wants to protect billionaires. We just have different approaches. Your idea is not the only idea. And when I look at this, I think about Donald Trump.
So let me give you a sense of what her different approaches are. And these are statements that she made, Klobuchar made last night. One of the statements was, oh, this Trump tax plan, these tax cuts, terrible. If I got elected, I would repeal significant parts of that tax legislation.
In other words, you're gonna keep most of the corporate tax cuts.
Yeah, let's keep it real.
Yeah, and by the way, you don't even have to agree with most. She said it, she's at least gonna keep some of the corporate tax cuts. In other words, I just have a difference of opinion with Trump that is of degree, not of kind. So Sanders and Warren are saying, no, we are gonna do things completely differently. Not only are we gonna restore those tax cuts to, or those tax rates to where they were, but we're gonna add taxes on top of that. So that's a legitimate difference of opinion and policy. And Klobuchar says, well, I'm not gonna do any of the taxes you're talking about. And the Trump tax cuts for the rich, well, I like some of them, but some of them is too much. Well, that's not a very compelling case, but that's gonna get to the heart of this issue, which is who's right and who's wrong. Because they think we're biased, we think they're biased. I'm gonna make our case in a second, but there's an easy way that you could find out. Well, how did they do? So I'm telling you right now, and as I've said and throughout the different debates, I'll tell you who I think won, and then you'll see, as you've seen in almost every debate, and I know they'll find it unbearable, but you can go back and look at the videos, you could go back and look at the numbers, and this is important. And I'm gonna get to the political ramifications of this in a second, but I've been right. And so I told you Yang was gonna go to 6, he did. I told you Warren was gonna rise because of policy issues, and she did. Is it about me? Not remotely. The policy matters, it matters. But the rest of the media says, no, I like Klobuchar fighting back, policy doesn't matter. Right. And so I told you that Kamala Harris would rise after she went after Biden, and she did rise. So, and I'm not a fan of Kamala Harris's policies overall. So we're actually objective. I tell you what's going to happen based on what actually occurred on the stage that night. So this time around, I told you last night, I think Sanders won. I thought Warren did well. I thought the progressives did great. And now all the pundits are telling you, almost all of them on Politico and on television, say Klobuchar and Buttigieg won. So let's find out. So over the next couple of weeks, I think Sanders will continue to now come back and start to rise. And they think apparently Klobuchar did great, so she should rise. And I'll tell you right now, ahead of time, so you can't cry about it later and say, oh, Cenk, you're doing puffery. Okay, I'm telling you, as always, ahead of time, Klobuchar will not rise. She will not rise. She did not do well. She went on stage and told everybody, I'm not gonna give you this, I'm not gonna give you that, I'm not gonna go for big change, and I'm not gonna go for hope. It's a terrible, even if you don't agree with it, or you do agree with it policy-wise, it's terrible politics.
Yes.
You remember that moment where she was doing a town hall on CNN and she said, hey, everybody look under your chairs. And that's what I'm gonna give you, nothing.
I can't believe,
And the pundits look at that and go, oh, giving the average person nothing. Way to go, Klobuchar is awesome.
Yeah.
I get to keep all my money, all my millions of dollars, and you get nothing from Klobuchar, she's rising. Really? Because she isn't. I told you she would never get above tiny numbers, and she's sitting at 2%. She's barely making it on the stage. Who was right and who was wrong? It matters. Why does it matter? I'm gonna let you get back to 1 second, Anna. Why does it matter? Because it's millions, potentially billions of dollars in free media that is at stake. So these guys do puffery of Klobuchar and Buttigieg, and that, so it's nonstop ads. Oh, Buttigieg was fantastic, fantastic. Klobuchar, fantastic. Sanders, terrible, terrible, terrible. Now that's an unbelievable amount of advertising on the side of the establishment. And then they say, no, you're biased. No, your bias is preposterous. No matter how many times we prove to you that you're wrong, you will not get off of it, because it isn't about being right or wrong factually. It's that you just want to support the candidates you like, because your bias is through the roof.
So Sophia Nelson, who I quoted earlier in regard to obviously her love for Klobuchar and Buttigieg, also commented on Warren and Bernie. So just to juxtapose what she had said previously, here's what she says about the progressive candidates. Warren maintained her status quo. Sanders was back, considering he just suffered a heart attack a couple of weeks ago. Oh wow, expert opinion, really, that's excellent.
And that's as kind as they'll ever be to Bernie Sanders. And if you noticed, her title, she's a Republican.
Yeah.
Why are we asking Republicans what they thought of Democrats? Of course, they liked the most conservative Democrats, Klobuchar and Buttigieg. Wow, what an interesting story. Oh, Republicans, who do you think we should pick? Could you imagine Republicans doing likewise? Going, oh, Democrats, what did you think of our debates? Who do you think we should pick? And Democrats go, oh, I think you should pick, you know, Mike Huckabee. And Republicans are like, oh, okay, let's pick Mike Huckabee. That conversation would never happen, never does happen. It's absurd. The Republicans don't give a damn what Democrats think. In fact, they'd go in the opposite direction. But yet, the politicos of the world, the mainstream media is constantly like, hey, you better do what the Republican consultants tell you to do about who you should pick as your nominee. Well, the only person who would do that is someone maniacally stupid. They're on the opposite side. Are you so biased you can't even see that?
Yeah, so rapid fire, I'm gonna go through the rest of this because it's important. Now, I have promoted a podcast on this show previously because I do listen to it daily, which is the name of the podcast, The Daily. It's the New York Times podcast. But I will criticize them when it's appropriate. And today's episode of that podcast was terrible. And it was also titled, The Moderate Strike Back, The Fourth Democratic Debate.
Well, the only thing I like about that is it makes you think of the Darth Vader, Empire Strikes Back. Well, that's true. Good luck with that.
Now,
I got news for you. It turns out your Death Star has an Achilles heel.
Now, we don't have polling from the debate yet, and I'm sure that we're going to see how the debate impacted the candidates' numbers, but we do have
some pieces. I'm sure Klobuchar won.
I'm sure, yeah. She went from like, what, 1%, if that?
Does anybody think Klobuchar, all of the Washington thinks Klobuchar won. Does anybody think ahead of time that the polling is going to show that Klobuchar won?
Now, here's some data that we do have, right?
Okay.
When it comes to social media, Twitter specifically, who was tweeted about the most? So if you take a look at this list, you have Joe Biden at number one, you have Elizabeth Warren at number two, Bernie Sanders at three, Kamala Harris at four, Pete Buttigieg at five, and Tulsi Gabbard at number six. Now, I'm mentioning this because in the spin room, based on what Ken Klippenstein, one of our reporters, said, everyone was buzzing about the establishment and centrist Democrats. And he had specifically mentioned there was a disconnect between what was going on in the spin room with mainstream media sources and what was actually happening on social media. So there's that. And then one other thing, what was the most tweeted moment? And this actually surprised me, and it was a strong moment for Julian Castro. It was when he said this, quote, "I'm not going to give these police officers another reason to go door to door in certain communities because police violence is also gun violence and we need to address that."
Yeah. So look, I think the things that are tweeted the most is not a great indication of who won the debate. But the mainstream media consistently manipulates the evidence. Al Gore won most of the debates against George Bush, so did John Kerry. Combined, they won 5 out of the 6 debates, but the media didn't play it that way. They said, oh, Al Gore did the sigh and the rolling of the eyes, he lost, he's terrible, etc. Oh, he takes advice from a woman on how to dress, I can't believe it, what a beta male. I mean, they went in and they did every Republican talking point. They never actually told anybody, no, Gore won the debates, including the one that he sighed in. They never told people that Kerry won the debates. Instead, they said he's a waffler, a flip-flopper. They did every Republican talking point. And so then they turn around and say, oh, it's the liberal media. Hilarious. So look, guys, proof's in the pudding. The polls are going to come out. They're going to continue to come out, both for the debate and overall. And Klobuchar will not have won the debate. And her numbers will not move. They paint, when Bernie Sanders hit his nadir, he was at 14%, still solidly in third. Right now, he's actually rising. And in New Hampshire, he's in a statistical tie with Warren and Biden. They're in a three-way tie. Okay, and in the latest George Washington University poll, nationally, Sanders has moved to number two, Biden has gone down to number three. But when they talk about Sanders, it is constantly framed as going down, in really bad shape, moving down, right? Well, where's Klobuchar going? Has she moved up?
Yeah.
Has she ever? So why don't they ever frame it as Klobuchar, who's had a disastrous campaign? Klobuchar, who's never moved up. Klobuchar, who's had no momentum.
Whose jokes never land during the
right.
Debates.
No, they never say that. How about Buttigieg? They're like, oh, Buttigieg, it could be Buttigieg, Buttigieg. Okay, so at his peak, he's at what, 5%? So, well, Bernie Sanders at his worst was triple the numbers of Buttigieg. Did a single article in the mainstream press ever frame it that way? Now, those are facts, but then they will turn around and say, oh, you guys like progressives, so you're biased. The original thought was, you're biased for Bernie Sanders because he's your uncle. Okay, I don't know why they thought we were biased for Bernie Sanders. I'll tell you why. Because we're progressive. And unlike you liars, we don't cover it up. You're for the status quo and you pretend you're not. You're for the establishment candidates and you pretend you're not. That is a much more insidious bias. Whereas we are honest about our perspective. So now I like Elizabeth Warren as well. And they're like, so is she your aunt? No, because she's progressive. So I support the progressive candidates based on their policies. But when you look at the polling and who has momentum, those are facts. And yet, as the two progressives take the lead now, clearly been in the top three the whole time, now moving to the top two. Still talking about like, well, I don't know about Sanders is reeling. And oh, here comes Buttigieg at 5% and Klobuchar at 1%. No, you guys are so biased, you can't even see straight.
And most importantly, and this is gonna be the last comment because we gotta go to break. Most importantly, the moment of attacking Warren has arrived. Because if you listen to that episode of The Daily, and if you read the articles post Ohio debate, you will see that the attacks by the very people who were propping Warren up to begin with are now attacking her.
And so, Anna, can I get a look, an acknowledgement here?
Yeah.
Look, I said long time ago to you who defended NPR and New York Times, I said, look, they have great reporting from time to time. So it's not like, oh my God, they're useless. We're not the right wing. We actually try to be as objective as we can. That's a great story. That's an interesting investigative report. But I said overall, they are biased against Bernie Sanders. And so you listen to both of them, you read, etc. Now, was I right or was I wrong? I mean, over the last year, what have they done?
I mean, I honestly have not seen reporting that's been terrible toward Bernie Sanders. But here's the thing. I mean, look, NPR, I'm specifically talking about NPR here because it's the only one that I'm going to defend a little bit. NPR does a decent job in separating their reporting from their commentary. Is their commentary, especially on their podcast, centrist leaning? Absolutely. I agree with you on that.
They're garbage. They're garbage. I've never heard one positive report about Bernie Sanders from NPR. Not one. And I can guarantee you that our TYT army or anyone could find you 100 that were against him. New York Times. A positive story about Bernie Sanders.
Well, that I agree. I mean,
that would be, you'd have to, they wouldn't do it under penalty of law.
I know, but for me, the thing that I was done with New York Times reporting on Bernie Sanders was when he released his detailed policy for Medicare for All, detailed. And the article had no details in it. There was like a little bit of this, a little bit, but there was no, he talks about how it's gonna be paid for. He talks about exactly what it would cover. He talks about the transition phase. How come none of this is covered in this straight news article about Bernie Sanders' plan? Which is why I had to go out of my way to literally myself read the entire legislation. And then I gave a more detailed report on it the following day after he had released it. Because no one in the mainstream media was doing the appropriate job in covering that story. We gotta go to break.
Yeah. The Washington Post had a fact check on Bernie Sanders the other day about Medicare for All. That was the worst fact check I've ever seen in my life. It was so twisted. It was almost like American Enterprise Institute or the Koch brothers wrote it themselves. When it comes to progressives, the mainstream media despises us so much, they can't see straight.
The only reason why I'm willing to give NPR credit is because they will book me to share my progressive perspective.
No, but that actually is not biased. That actually is relevant, right? Because most of the other outlets do not book progressives. It isn't about us. But are you booking progressives at all? Do progressives have any voice? So yes, credit to NPR, from time to time they'll have you on. Credit to CNN, from time to time they have us on, right? But until we broke through, you couldn't find a progressive on any of those outlets if your life depended on it.
Right.
And they say, what do you mean? We're super progressive. That's what Rush Limbaugh tells us all the time. We love how Amy Klobuchar is not gonna change anything. All right, I'm done with it. All right, let's come back and do disastrous Trump stories.
At TYT, we frequently talk about all the ways that big tech companies are taking control of our online lives, constantly monitoring us and storing and selling our data. But that doesn't mean we have to let them. It's possible to stay anonymous online and hide your data from the prying eyes of big tech. And one of the best ways is with ExpressVPN. ExpressVPN hides your IP address, making your active ID more difficult to trace and sell to advertisers. ExpressVPN also encrypts 100% of your network data to protect you from eavesdroppers and cyber criminals. And it's also easy to install. A single mouse click protects all your devices. But listen, guys, this is important. ExpressVPN is rated number one by CNET and Wired magazine. So take back control of your life online and secure your data with a top VPN solution available, ExpressVPN. And if you go to expressvpn.com/TYT, you can get 3 extra months for free with this exclusive link just for TYT fans. That's expressvpn.com/TYT. Check it out today.
We hope you're enjoying this free clip from the Young Turks. If you want to get the whole show and more exclusive content while supporting independent media, become a member at tyt.com/join today. In the meantime, enjoy this free segment. All right, back on the Young Turks. Let's go to members comments first. tyt.com/join to become a member. Katie Nicole 87 says, Amy and Pete shouldn't have been on the stage and they both need to shut up. Actually, I don't agree. Look, guys, we have, just because they're, the rest of the media is unfair and the establishment, et cetera, is unfair, doesn't mean we should be. I'm perfectly happy to hear out Klobuchar and Pete Buttigieg. When Pete Buttigieg started the race, I had no idea what his opinions were. And so we found out, it turns out we don't agree, but they should get to say, and I'm not afraid of them saying whatever they want to say. Let them say it. It's not working. It's them saying, oh no, yeah, we shouldn't try to get everybody healthcare. We should do my weak sauce plan. Mm-hmm. Have at it, man. Do 28 debates on that. We'll kick your ass every time. I don't mind a debate of ideas at all. So, and I like that there's different voices. I thought Tom Steyer did a good job talking about the corporate takeover of our government. That's a good point. I'm glad he's on the stage. Kaylee says, Cenk, quote, yo, Anna, I'm really happy for you. I'm gonna let you finish, but. What is this?
Thank you.
Okay.
You are, I know you're sick. You know how there's like an over-the-counter medication for people who get sick, but then they had to put it behind the counter because people were using it to take meth. Did you take that today?
No. That had a long setup.
I know, but it was good, right?
Well, yeah. Anyway, Bobby, on the other hand, says, Cenk, the god of political wisdom.
Oh, jeez.
There you go,
come
Bobby.
On.
Okay. All right, seriously, one last one. The mathemagician on Twitter says, the establishment push for Klobuchar began last weekend on Real Time with Bill Maher, where Bill spent 10 minutes advertising for her and letting her smear his friend Bernie Sanders. Can we please stop calling this neoliberal jackass progressive now?
Oh, I mean, that had ended for us at least a long time ago. I don't know if I've ever referred to him as progressive. But I will say this, it does show how he doesn't have as much sway as people might think, because it didn't really help her poll numbers.
And if the media is correct that we're the ones supporting Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren, and Bill Maher and Joe Scarborough and all the rest are supporting Klobuchar, apparently we're a billion times more powerful than they are. But if you tell them that, they're like, no way, no way, you guys are not at all important. Now the candidates we support suck, and you get the ones you support are killing it, but you're biased and you're making all the difference, but you make no difference. Oh, okay, I appreciate your logic.
All right, so let's move on to the rest of the news. Let's do some positive news before we move on to disastrous stuff. So, Senator Bernie Sanders received incredibly big and important endorsements from three members of the squad, the freshman Democrats. This is important because there was some worry that maybe they wouldn't endorse him, maybe they would wait until the Democratic candidate wins the primary and then they'd endorse him, but that is not what happened. You have Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ilhan Omar, and Rashida Tlaib, all three of them endorsing Bernie Sanders. The only remaining member of the squad is Ayanna Pressley. She has not made an endorsement yet. Now, Ocasio-Cortez, according to The Hill, will join Sanders at his Bernie's Back rally just outside the freshman lawmaker's congressional district. And one other thing to note is that Ilhan Omar put out a video statement already supporting Bernie Sanders and endorsing him as the presidential candidate for the Democrats. And here's that video right now.
I am so proud to endorse Senator Bernie Sanders for president. Senator Bernie Sanders is the only candidate that has built a movement and continues to build a movement that transcends gender, ethnicity, religion, and we know that in order to take on Trump, we're going to need a unifier, someone who understands what the fight looks like, and someone who is ready to defeat him. I'm one of the people that was inspired by the movement that the senator has built. There was an America that I dreamed about. There's an America that most people believe in. It is an ideal. It's not reality yet. And he started the work of organizing for that America. And that has inspired me to get involved and run myself to help others also organize for that America.
So a couple of things here. First of all, that's weird. I thought she was anti-Semitic, but here she is endorsing the Jewish candidate. Mm-hmm. Oh, maybe that was a lie spread by Nancy Pelosi and Democratic leadership and then picked up by
and
Donald Trump. Yes.
Yeah.
So, well, Pelosi started it, Trump picked it up. It was a nice tag team effort. But no, it turns out, no, she really wants the Jewish candidate to win. Funny. It's almost as if she cares about the policies and doesn't care about race or ethnicity, et cetera, like the Republicans who are obsessed with it. So, anyway, now onto the substance of it. So, why are they doing this? Because Bernie had their back.
He inspired me to get involved. That's really the line that stood out to me the most, because would young progressive women feel as empowered as they did to go out there to challenge Democratic incumbents, to go against this power structure on the Democratic side, to try to represent the American people. I mean, they might, but I think that Bernie Sanders is the one who started an incredibly important movement in the country. It inspired people to run for Congress. It inspired people to get politically active. It inspired people to demand more in terms of policy and not settle for scraps that some of these candidates have put out in the past. I love this. This is great. And you're right, he had their back. He stood with Ilhan Omar when she was being attacked by Donald Trump. And you know, now they're showing that they have his back, and I think that's important.
Okay, so some good smart progressives that I know behind the scenes say, well, you know, they're worried about that, whether Bernie can actually build a sustainable movement and does the infrastructure that's necessary for it. And they think Warren is great at that behind the scenes. They're right about Warren. She is great about that behind the scenes. And for example, the lone holdout from the Just Democrats is, at least of the freshman class, is Ayanna Pressley. And Warren helped her a lot, because Warren is also great at going in and helping progressives, including the Just Democrat there, but and also Warren endorsed Jessica Cisneros and Marie Newman, who are both Just Democrats running against Democratic incumbents. Okay, so credit where credit is due. But if you're criticizing Bernie for not building the movement enough, well, that isn't obviously isn't true. And so you can say Warren is better at some of the behind the scenes stuff. Fair enough point. Okay, but look at this. He built this whole thing. I mean, for 40 years, he was the tip of the spear.
Yes.
And he would not move, he would not budge. He had these ideas, and he pushed and he pushed, and he created space for Justice Democrats, for Ocasio-Cortez, who, by the way, worked on his campaign. And then not only did he do that, after Ocasio-Cortez won the primary, her and Bernie Sanders went around the country campaigning for progressives, including in primaries. I remember when they were on this show supporting Brent Welder, who's another Justice Democrat in the middle of Kansas. Mm-hmm. And they were on here together. They fought together, and he fought for them. So it makes all the sense in the world, and it's the right thing to do for them to now fight for him.
And for me, you know, you mentioned 40 years of being the tip of that spear and pushing for these progressive ideals. He was doing that when these policy proposals were not popular at all, right? He was doing that in an era when equality for certain groups of people weren't even up for discussion, for the gay community, for individuals who've been disenfranchised. Like, he's just been fighting the fight the longest. He's been consistent. And I think that he, and I've said this on the show before, I think he's the best candidate because of that. So I'm really happy to see progressive lawmakers, freshman Democrats, support him in the way that they have. And go ahead.
Yeah, just one more quick thing about that. Look, Bernie Sanders did a gay rights protest back in 1986, and he got a lot of flack for that, and he took a lot of political hits for that, but he did it anyway. Now, the mainstream media celebrates the Hillary Clintons and the Barack Obamas and the Joe Bidens for getting to Bernie's position in the year 2013.
I know.
He was there in at least 86, probably earlier than that. So, but he gets no credit. So in the real world, put aside the mainstream media, who's so incredibly biased, in the real world, whether he wins or loses, and whether you're gonna vote for him or not, you might still think somebody's a better candidate today. But you can't dispute, the guy's a legend. For progressives, an absolute legend. And now AOC, Omar and Tlaib coming in now, also the timing matters. So right when he needs them, he has the health scare, everybody in the media is counting him out, and here comes the cavalry.
And he looked great last night, by the way.
He did, he looked fantastic. And I to see that, and remember, of course, the original Just Democrat Ro Khanna, who's a campaign chair of Bernie Sanders, to see him help and get progressive movement up off the ground, and then for the Just Democrats to come and arrive to the potential rescue.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing to behold if you're a progressive.
It is. So this is how we feel about the endorsements. Now let's talk about how the mainstream media has covered, or members of the centrist media have covered this. So Bernie Sanders has been endorsed by freshman Democrats, including Representatives Ocasio-Cortez, Rashida Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar. Now, while this is great news and it shows the level of support Bernie Sanders has when it comes to progressive lawmakers, there are some in the mainstream media, including John King of CNN, who are concerned that maybe this is not a good look for Bernie Sanders. Take a look at his commentary.
There is no doubting his fundraising. There is no doubting the depth of his support across the country. But is it in the teens? Can he get into 20s? How do you win? That will certainly help him. But it will also, I think, Senator Klobuchar is coming in to join us now, have some of the other candidates say, wait a minute. You know, is this too far left? Is this too uncompromising? Is it too urban? Is it too internet? Does the Democratic Party need to find a broader audience?
Is it too urban? And this is the discussion in regard to women of color endorsing him. So I don't look,
Okay. Look, we can get into the criticism of is it too internet? I don't know what that means. Okay, and all the other things that he said. But is it too urban? Let us now note the irony of these same establishment anchors saying Bernie Sanders is no good. He can't get African American support.
No, this is okay. I just want to remind, it wasn't too long ago, 2016, Bernie Sanders had two main criticisms, right? He is not attracting the African American vote. Women don't like him, right? Those were the two criticisms. So now you have women of color who are elected progressives endorsing him, and they're flipping the script. And just to remind you of what the commentary toward Bernie Sanders was like in 2016, here's Emily Sussman. This is from February of 2016. I'm not sure what she's doing today, but she was the campaign's director for the Center for American Progress.
And here's
what she had to say about Bernie Sanders. Again, February of 2016.
Sanders is desperately trying to cut into the large advantage that Clinton has with communities of color, because part of the reason that Sanders has done well so far is because the states that he's been in are some of the whitest in the country, Iowa, New Hampshire, and that is the base of his support. Sanders really has one message. Everything comes back to undue influence on Wall Street. Everything comes back to that. And so for that reason,
I'm aware of that.
Public colleges.
So for that reason, he really has trouble with communities of color because it's really not something that they buy into. So he's gonna have to change it a little bit, and trying to identify with the president is the way that he's decided he's gonna do it.
And by the way, real quick, we did do a story on Sussman fairly recently. She had made a statement about how if people don't support Warren and they decide to vote for Bernie instead, then it's sexism. She said something along those lines.
Yeah. Huh, that's funny.
Her sexism is showing was her exact comment, sorry.
Yeah, I don't think anybody's gonna accuse AOC of sexism. Really, you're gonna go in that direction? And look at their obvious hypocrisy. He can't get black voters, and now he's too urban. His support is too urban. That means black, that means minority, okay? And they say it without skipping a beat. And nobody else comments on it like, hey, John, what is that's crazy talk? Look, even if he, without the context of what they had said about him in the past, without the hypocrisy, it would still be an outrageous comment.
Absolutely.
What do you mean it's too urban?
Yeah.
What does that mean? And in fact, they do this all the time. They say, oh, can the others that are not Joe Biden win over the white male voters in the middle of the country? Why are they the only ones that matter? How about can you win over the African American vote in Atlanta, which will help you swing Georgia? Stacey Abrams nearly won it. Can a Democrat win it at a presidential level? Of course they can. Well, you know, and I can go through 100 other states. How about the black vote in Philadelphia, etc.? No, for a lot of the mainstream media, I don't think they do it out of any kind of malice. I think it's just natural, like the conventional wisdom that they have built up that they forget is loaded with stereotypes. And I'm being kind here, right?
Yeah, definitely. And then I got to give you one more tweet because I know you're going to love this one. It's from Marcos Moulitsas, who has not been a fan of Bernie Sanders.
Oh, really?
This is following news that AOC had endorsed Bernie. He said, quote, can't wait to see how this registers, if at all. We've evolved past endorsements. No one cares. Will AOC be the exception?
So when in 2016 we said, oh, Hillary Clinton getting endorsed by every other corrupt politician, establishment politician is the most obvious thing in the world. Yeah, they don't like Bernie Sanders because he represents change, etc. They're like, no, endorsements are the most important thing. Nate Silver would talk about it. Well, endorsements means where the party is going. Wherever the party is going, that's going to be the candidate. Endorsements are everything. Now that Bernie has endorsements from the most popular politicians in the country, the most popular Democrats in the country, all of a sudden, endorsements never really mattered. And who cares about black people and women? Now, nobody cares. That's Bernie's base, but who cares?
It's unbelievable. They can't see it. Isn't that amazing that they can't see how biased they are? And then they'll turn around and say, well, anyone who supports Bernie Sanders by definition is biased. But all of us who hate Bernie Sanders by definition are not biased. Even though we say outrageous, unbelievably hypocritical things like you just saw.
Unbelievable. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, Trump's taxes.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Young Turks. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, Cenk Uygur, and I'll see you soon.